Show presents Scratch a Track,
the podcast where we debate which track to scratch off some of the most known and unknown albums of all time.
We live in an era of singles.
This is an album.
People no longer listen to an album for the work it truly is.
It kind of defines a band.
It's just not something that people relate to nowadays.
We've all gotten the dreaded.
Started out as a game.
Which track on the album would you scratch out if you had to? Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we are going to discuss Demon Days by Gorillaz with a Z.
With a Z. I don't want to leave that out.
No. Yeah.
This is their second studio album.
Yes. Yeah.
And we were just discussing offline that their third studio album is Plastic Beach, is it not? That is correct?
That is correct, because D-Sides, which came out after this, and I listened to D-Sides quite a bit. There's two discs on that one, but I think it was considered, a lot of B-Sides, but for whatever reason, they called it D-Sides, because I think a lot of it was from the Demon Days era.
That would make sense.
But there's great stuff on that. Like, I would think of that as an album. Because it's
totally
got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. Well, we haven't really discussed that one, but we do have an episode about Plastic Beach. So if you guys like this album or like that album, definitely check that one out. It's, I think, about last fall it came out. So give it a view, give it a listen, and while you're at it, give us a like.
Right. Yeah, please do. I think this is there's an interesting progression that they had between the three albums, and sure, you can certainly hear it, and I think that they kind of maintained, at least in my estimation, which is not really worth a whole lot, but they really kind of maintained this sound that they had, but within that they did a lot, they did different things on the other albums. I feel like the first one probably had more guitar than okay. The subsequent two. This one was incredibly synth heavy, and then they worked with a choir, and then they worked with the orchestra, a Western style orchestra and the orchestra from Beirut. So they in each one they did something kind of unique and different, and I felt like musically they grew and changed. And
well, I also wonder how much, you know, you would attribute that to working with Danger Mouse as the producer on this album. He didn't produce the first one, but you bring him out on this one.
Yeah.
And I think to this point in his producing career, I mean, you know, the most notable thing he had done, this was very early on in his career, was the Gray album, right?
And I had read that was kind of what prompted Damon Albarn to reach out to him. Was being really impressed by that, which I get, because I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, who isn't? Also, you know, just another plug, but we also have done that album as well. Back before the days of video, which is really not a problem if you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite
podcast. Yeah, I mean, that was so long ago. If you're going to leave any comments on that, damn, you might have to, like, send us a telegram, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, definitely. Some of the background on this was very interesting about how he conceptualized it and what kind of the idea of the album was. And of course, I'll have listened to a lot of these albums, but I haven't always read up on them. Right. You know, just because I've known them throughout the years, I've really liked them, but there are some that you just don't read up on everything. We do now, but.
You don't know exactly kind of what the motivation or inspiration behind it is, or, you know, what's influenced some of the songs and themes and concepts. And that's a great thing about Gorillaz, is they do have sort of specific themes and concepts and inspirations. I mean, yeah. Plastic Beach had that, you know, this album had that. And I think, you know, I'll let you kind of sort of drop the hammer on the story of what kind of inspired inspired this, but it is very cool when there's certain maybe events and things that you can pinpoint, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's what, you know, started this idea in my mind, and that's where I got the visualization. Because Gorillaz is not just an audio, I mean, it's an experience.
Especially at
this point, because there was going to be like a movie of this. They were like writing a script, and there was like a whole thing that they were going into. But I'll let you, you know, talk a little bit about the inspiration for it.
Well, yeah, apparently he took a train journey from Beijing into Mongolia, and it sounds like it was an overnight.
That sounds awesome.
Dude, it does. But I specifically talked about showing or like at one point before it was going to be night, I guess, getting to this part where it was just as vast as you could see and everything was just like dead. And then I think that kind of, and then the next day he said waking up and everything was like beautiful and, you know, you're in this whole other spot. And so I think part of this whole deal was this idea of like perpetual night is one of the themes of Demon Days is like this idea of like perpetual night. And I don't know. I think that's pretty interesting. And I would imagine quite a fascinating train ride.
Sure. Well, and I think that would be a good thing to ask some of the people maybe watching this is like what their interpretations are. Maybe they have more information about, you know, his journey and with the inspiration and sort of the story and theme behind it. Because again, it's an experience. And, you know, I would be really curious because again, it did sound like, you know, Jamie, kind of the creative visual part of Gorillaz, Jamie Hewlett and his team, they were again, working on a script for, you know, a movie Demon Days. And Damon was still recording Think Tank with Blur. And so by the time things kind of came to fruition and they were going to start writing and recording this album, the idea of doing a movie for all of it kind of had been sort of scrapped. But I mean, dude, if there was like a script, I would love to know, like that would be a pretty interesting story. Like what? Okay. And how much of that made it into the music videos? Because the music videos, you know, the main ones, I mean, Feel Good Inc. and then El Manana, the videos actually go like right into each other, which is pretty cool. And so I'm wondering like how much of the script kind of went into that. You know, I mean, dude, I'm sure probably somewhere by now, if there's like an actual script or something, you could probably find like a leaked version online. And you know, so if there's any super fans out there, which I'm sure there are, please let us know below.
Yeah.
So,
now, I didn't. That was one thing I neglected to do in researching this was to watch all the videos. But if I am not mistaken, isn't Feel Good Inc. where they're kind of riding around in a convertible? Or am I incorrect in that?
No, I think you're in. So with Feel Good Inc., it starts off and they're it's very utopian.
Okay.
And basically it goes into like this tower. It starts off, it goes into this tower and it's like a feel good ink tower. And
Okay. Yeah.
And then it cuts away, you know, we'll talk about this during the song too. But it kind of cuts away with the windmill. And then, you know, there's like I just love the idea kind of behind it. The windmill in the sky, that's like this small, like dirt island, and it's like that's how it's like floating through the sky. Such
creative visually, imagery. It is really creative. And one thing, another thing I read that was interesting is when they were apparently coming up with this, apparently it was Jamie Hewlett who said that they should go about the same process that they used to do the first one because then. Then it wouldn't be thought of as a gimmick. We'll just do it better. Yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is a real thing. It wasn't just like a one-off that we thought would be kind of neat. Like, we're going to keep going with it. Right. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I definitely did too.
Really
proving a point. Right, Courtney? I just like that whole idea of it. And even, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit. Obviously, you know, there's the characters and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the characters, I forget, Noodle, who is the one of the female characters.
Not Needles?
No, not Needles from Back to the Future Part 2, who's played by Flea, which is just one of the best performances
ever.
Ever. If he didn't win an Academy Award, he should have received an MTV like video award.
Lifetime Achievement, maybe.
Lifetime Achievement. Dude, he actually kind of deserves a lifetime. Anyways.
I agree.
But it was kind of funny because the female vocalist, and I'll have to figure out what song it is because I have it in my notes, but was replaced from the first, you know, from their first record on, and then on this record it's performed by someone else, the character Noodle. And so what's cool though is it got me thinking, like, that's just such an interesting concept. It's like, I mean, think about all the movies and like Batman movies, like how many people have played Joker and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, who's your favorite Joker? It's like, oh, who's your favorite Noodle? Right. Like,
yeah.
I just think that's kind of a cool thing. And sort of a interesting way to go about, you know, the production of stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny because you know how, if you look at the Wikipedia page for Gorillaz or any band that has had a lineup that has changed over time, they have sort of that visual graph of a timeline,
the colors,
and with the colors and then each person's name, dude, they have that for a virtual members timeline, which I think is great. I really think it's funny.
That's freaking awesome, man.
Obviously 2D being the one who's been in it forever. And then Murdoch is pretty representative too.
Yeah.
But it looks like Noodle took a little bit of a hiatus between about mid 2006 to, you know, just after the turn of 2010. Hey, I'm going to guess by the length of the line, probably like, you know, March, April-ish.
Sometimes you have to get lost to find yourself.
Dude.
Don't you? Well, I want to, and you said you had seen the documentary Bananas.
Yes.
I have yet to see that. And I
found it on YouTube.
So that's the thing. I started looking on Apple and I couldn't find it there. On YouTube, or not on YouTube, on Amazon, I could find it, but you also had to have some like partial subscription
to something else. Dude, annoying. Like, can I watch it or not? Just or binary would be good on this one.
In fact, I would rather pay the $7.99 to rent it than sign up for like the subscription that I'm going
to
forget about.
Oh, yeah. And then sweet. So I need another username and password to remember. Like, pretty soon the Excel file is going to explode. But anyways, digress. But yeah, the Bananas documentary is really cool. It's weird, though, because most documentaries either have some sort of narration or sort of a consistent sort of, someone who almost acts like a narrator. Dude, this one kind of doesn't. It's just like footage of them doing things and record.
It's more fly on the wall type.
Yeah, but to the point where it's like, I guess it makes sense from a time perspective. But yeah, there's no real, like, you know, there isn't even
title bars
that are just saying like, and then in 2004, you know, or whatever. It just kind of goes. And so this album being the second one is kind of I want to say it kind of ends with this going on when this is almost done or close, but it's
okay.
They smoke a lot of cigarettes, dude. I have never seen people smoke more cigarettes than Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett in this. It's amazing that they both don't have tracheotomies.
That is amazing. Hopefully they, you know, don't, because I like what they do and hopefully they continue to make music.
So. Oh yeah. No, I agree. There was a comment that I thought was funny. Somebody commented, they were like, Damon Albarn somehow actually looks better at 50 than he does in his 20s, which I thought was really funny.
Benjamin Button, man.
Yeah. That's funny.
All right. Well, I think maybe you want to get into the tracks here, Graham, or
I just, the only other thing I thought was interesting to touch on is where it was recorded, which by this time, I know when they were doing the first album, Damon Albarn had made a very small studio in kind of like a London flat or maybe not flat, but in some sort of building. Yeah. But it was a proper studio, but it was smaller. But then when they did this one, they had built this Studio 13, which is in London. And it looks awesome. I mean,
it's like the Enormo Dome of studios.
Oh, man, it looks so cool. Like, what an awesome environment to record in that you specifically designed. And I read somewhere where a lot of studios, either they don't have everything like mic'd or connected all the time and you kind of do it on like a project basis, or things are connected and you have a giant patch panel akin to like an old telephone operator. So you can say, I want this to go to input number this one.
Room. Right.
But
right.
I had read somewhere that when they did this, they basically have everything with like its own dedicated fader all the time. Like everything is plugged directly into the master board and it's just like ready to go so they can be super efficient. And then not that patching is going to like really degrade the signal, but it's all direct connection, you know, like right. That's cool.
I dig it, man.
Yeah.
I dig it. That's cool. Well, I think we should get into the tracks because there's 15 of them, man. And I think we gotta go. So I mean, you know, the first one is a very short track titled Intro. So it's very descriptive there. But what I found was interesting, dude, is basically that you know, it's a sample from the song Dark Earth, which is from the soundtrack of Dawn of the Dead.
And that's know that.
Yeah. So when you hear it's that now. Is that like an oboe? Like
I think it's a bass clarinet. I think. And now that you mentioned that, it makes sense that I couldn't find what it was. But it having recorded a bunch of different things like that before, and the bass clarinet's big.
Right.
It's vertical, you know, it's a big vertical thing. And I think that's what it is a bass clarinet. Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out. So when I listened to the, I can only really find it on YouTube. Now I found the Dawn of the Dead soundtrack on iTunes, but for some reason this song wasn't on it. I don't know. But anyways, I found it on YouTube, and the bass clarinet and then that drum seemed to be the main things that they took and sampled, and then there's some other sounds that they put over it in the intro. But it's cool, man. It has like. Once I read it, I was like, oh, that's from Dawn of the Dead. I was like, yeah, it has this kind of weird, eerie, creepy sound to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's strange, but also has sort of like a creepy, cartoony sound. And that's kind of what I, you know, how obviously because of their, you know, visual aspect of them. That's how I think of it, too.
But I think of from the aspect of like this idea of perpetual night. I mean, man, does that that thematically sets the tone, and it's really cool and well done.
Yep. All right, so moving on into Last Living Souls. Mm-hmm. Dude, I found the opening kind of synth beat to be very funny. It to me it sounded almost like an automated like an automated patch that you would just like initially right in the beginning. You know how your synth just kind of like comes with a pre-recorded drum beat, and it's like, okay, and then you can build off it. Like that's kind of what it felt like. And then obviously it goes in a different direction. But initially when I heard that, I was like, oh man, I feel like I've almost like heard that before. Right.
Well, and I think that's why people use stuff like that, because what it reminds you of is like an old Casio.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, exactly. Yeah, you just, you can pretty much just take the thing and kind of
get your Casio and your plastic beats.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it just, there's lots of beats, and you kind of course, I'm like on the spot and I haven't played it in forever, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then a lot of times you can just kind of go. Sometimes you can make little like things over the top, but
some things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just or you like hit those. A key and it starts adding in something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You build it and layer it. But, with this song, it has a great kind of transition into like an acoustic part, and then a piano comes in. And, you know, I just, I like it incorporating all those different sounds and mixes. And you got to remember, this is 2005. That it wasn't like a regular thing yet. I feel were really mixing sort of genres and sounds like this together. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I think he does such a good job of using the synthesizer as more than just like, let's say, like a spice in cooking. Like, you know what I mean? He uses it in a lot of different ways that I guess I wouldn't think of. But you hear it and you're like, that's a really cool way to do that.
Totally. Well, and he definitely likes to, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to put in a synth part here. It's like, dude, there's layers of synths.
Oh, yeah.
Times too.
Oh, yeah.
And all those different textures really, really, work together very well.
Well, into the next one, he has that. He does like those synth arpeggios in Kids with Guns, you know?
Yeah.
And that again works really well. And I guess that whole bit of subject matter, it said that there was a kid in his daughter's school, yeah, who brought a knife to school, and not even like because he was going to hurt someone. It was just like, dude, check this out.
Look what I found.
Yeah. And so I thought it was an interesting bit of subject matter. And I saw in the documentary when he was working with that choir, he had to like explain this to them because they apparently someone in this was like not really cool with the whole idea that there's a song called Kids with Guns.
I can see that.
And he's like, I'm not promoting this. I'm like, I'm trying to highlight that there is an issue in society.
What the fuck is that?
Well, and this is, again, you got to think about 2005. Now, initially, I found it interesting. I mean, the story is the kid in his daughter's class brought a knife. But again, you know, it's called Kids with Guns. So immediately for me, when I saw this, I don't know about you, I thought about Columbine. Like that's
I mean that's how could you not most, this was at like the height of school around, shooting territory.
Yeah, so this album came out in 2005 and I forget what year Columbine happened.
99, I think.
Were we in high school then?
So dude, by this time you had probably had like five more major ones just in the US. Well,
because I looked up what year the movie Bowling for Columbine came out, and I think that was about 2003, 2004.
Okay.
So I thought maybe it happened a little closer to that. But yeah, it wasn't just like, hey, this is like a one-off thing. Like it was kind of becoming like a trend, unfortunately.
And yeah.
So I think that's where he got the motivation for this. But then we go into, Oh Green World. And, it's the song starts off really strange and has this almost like high pitched eerie synth, and again, maybe that's kind of what, you're talking about the night sound. Right. And, so I found that really interesting. You know, it just, there's certain synth sounds that have like a creepiness to them.
Yeah.
And when you think about nighttime, man, like that, you know, the nighttime is the right time, isn't it?
Yeah. And I wrote that it's like that one particular is almost more like a string sound. I think that you're talking about, but yeah, the intro always stuck out to me because it's that very distinct delay with kind of a telephony sounding guitar, and then they kind of mess with the tape speed, whether it was on tape or not, I don't know, but I mean they make it sound as if they're messing with the tape speed, and it kind of goes up as it ends and goes into the song.
When that guitar comes in, man, it's gritty. So then we go on to Dirty Harry, and
awesome song.
Dude, it's so funny because I got to admit, I mean, I knew it wasn't Bobby Brown, but I kept reading featuring Booty Brown, but mentally in my head, it kept being like, oh, Bobby Brown, I couldn't get that out of my head. Like, I was like, wait, what? No.
I know.
But yeah, dude, so, I mean, it was released as kind of the promotional single, and I haven't heard it, but apparently on Damon Albarn's one of his, I guess, albums, or he has a solo album, Democrazy, sorry. There's an early version of this, and I haven't listened to that, but I'd like to compare those versions and see how kind of close they are. But dude, song's funky, man, and dude, that's the awesome. Children's choir. It's so great, man. So unique.
The beat just fits with it musically so nice too. When it comes, I mean, it's a really good song, and I love how, weirdly enough, the biggest song on their first album was called Clint Eastwood. And then they have Dirty Harry.
You got to get into character, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I kind of like that continuation. I didn't know if they would throw something in on Plastic Beach, but I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. I know. No Clint Eastwoods or Dirty Harry's or like In the Line of Fire or Big Bad, Good, Bad, and the Ugly or anything. Like
yeah,
that. But,
yeah.
But so, dude, the thing with this video that I found very interesting initially, so if you've seen the video, it takes place like in the desert, and like it's got the kids and the choir, and they're kind of there. But I forget the character's name, but you know, he's out in the desert, and they were initially going to have the background be like animated desert, but then they found out it was actually going to be easier and cheaper to just shoot in the real deserts, dude. So they went down to Namibia, where
hopefully
going in October.
Yeah,
That's also where like Mad Max Fury Road was shot. And it's really, really cool. Just a great, great visual. In this desert, you can just tell, man, it's wild and it's remote. But I like the video. It's pretty great. And like Booty Brown comes out like in the video. It's like he just like explodes out of the sand and he starts singing and or rapping or whatever. He just kind of like attacks the song. Chanting. And he's at the camera chanting, whatever. I totally dig it, man. I thought it was it's a great song, but also again a great video. Which leads us right into Feel Good Inc., which is another great song and great video, which we talked about a little bit. And I would say, I don't know. I mean, do you think would you say this is the Gorillaz' most popular song?
I believe it is noted as that.
Is
like
it?
Whether, okay. I mean, and I think it is, it probably is. Now, I certainly don't think it's their best.
But it was a single, man. You heard this on
the radio, like all the time.
Crazy. Dude, the video has 4.6 million likes, but it also has 116,000 dislikes. Now, let me tell you this, man. I want to strive to have 116,000 dislikes on one of our videos.
Yeah.
Like, that's when you know you made it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, man, 116,000 people are like, you know, not only were they like, oh, you know what? I don't like
it. It's not my thing. I dislike it.
I feel the need to be like, boom, I'm hitting that thumbs down.
Which is kind of too bad, because like you said, visually, it's really creative, the whole aesthetic that they've made. And
The idea, man, it's fun. It's unique. It's different.
Like, yeah, I guess all those people felt like their music and visual animation project was better. Maybe. I don't know.
Probably 116,000 of them.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it. Send us
like, subscribe, and comment below.
But the cool thing about this, and this is where it sort of goes back to the, we were talking about the script for what there was going to be a potential movie. I'm curious if to Feel Good Inc. and then the next song, El Mañana, which is Spanish for The Tomorrow, was a part of, was a part of the, the script that they had in mind, because it's like, hey, these songs are going to go together. Let's put, the story together. And because basically, I think, what is it? The end of Feel Good Inc. kind of ends with the island floating off and the these helicopters kind of going after it. And that's how El Mañana starts. Mm-hmm. And there's like these, two helicopter gunships catch up to Noodle's floating windmill and start attacking it. I don't know, I guess the windmill starts the I don't know what you'd call it, the whatever, the I'm gonna say the branches or whatever, but the cloth wings? Part kind of wings, kind of burns the windmill itself, the paddles.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Starts to burn and then it starts to slowly just kind of like
go down,
drift down. Yeah, it goes.
Oh, is De La Soul? Because I think it's important to mention that De La Soul is a rap group that started in the 80s, a U.S. rap group, and it was. They always do really cool collaborations. I think that's always noted as a big one. How are they portrayed in the video, or are they? Because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Well, they're in the Feel Good Inc. video. And so basically, it's mostly in the, I guess they kind of cut and jump back and forth. But you know how I said in the beginning, there's the tower, the Feel Good Inc. tower. And then the video kind of starts and the cartoons, the band's playing and whatnot. But then there's these like, it reminds me of almost like 1984 where there's these like, utopian, like big screens that TV screens that come on in the background or whatever. And then the De La Soul, they're like on these big TV screens live. They're not portrayed as cartoons.
Okay.
And they're kind of like screaming and rapping at the characters almost. So it has that 1984 sort of feel to it, I think.
Well, and that's one thing you said, it was like that their rap in this is, it's not smooth. It's pretty abrasive and it is like an attack. So I think that's cool as it was portrayed in that way in the video. Anyways, yep. I thought I like El Mañana. It's a lot more melancholy and just sort of subdued than some of the other tracks on the album.
No, it definitely is. Yeah. No, I had that in my notes as well. It's definitely a chill, kind of has a chill vibe to it, but yeah, the melancholy definitely is very apparent. So moving on, middle of the album, we're getting there. Every Planet We Reach Is Dead.
I love the title. Awesome title.
And here's the thing, and I would love to know this. Like, dude. It has such a tribal kind of feel to it. It reminded me a lot of The Doors. And I swear there's a song, the way Ray Manzarek, plays the keyboard, like that, just kind of that pouncing
really beat. Percussive. Yeah.
Percussive.
Yeah, I took note of that too. And I like the wah is very heavy when they get into that.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely. But it's kind of interesting because I feel like, again, the way he sings it is kind of chill, but one thing I really liked is the background vocals on the track. And then kind of about halfway through it just kind of goes off into its own area, its own little world. And like, dude,
and they do a great job of that throughout the album of totally, just kind of,
yeah.
I don't want to say breakdowns, but just these kind of B sections or maybe C sections.
No pun intended. Yeah.
But yeah, they'd really change stylistically and are able to come back in a way that makes sense all the time. And that's
they just resolve the shit out of it, don't they?
They don't resolve medium, dude. They resolve real hard.
Real hard.
Yeah.
All right. November Has Come, Grim, featuring MF Doom.
R.I.P. MF Doom. I think he is one of my favorite rappers. His voice is incredibly smooth, and he did an album. And I wonder if this was part of that connection. He did an album with Danger Mouse too, called The Mouse and the Mask. I would definitely recommend giving that a listen. And there's all these like samples from like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and stuff in there. It's kind of weird, but it's a really cool album. And then his Operation Doomsday album, I like quite a bit. He kind of uses like these samples from I swear there's one of them where he's got a sample from Scooby-Doo in there.
Oh yeah.
And I think one of the lines of one of the songs is he says something like, if it wasn't for these meddling kids, which is a classic line for, it's like the Scooby-Doo ending.
Meddling kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would have got away with it too. But yeah, dude, unfortunately MF Doom, passed away, I guess, in October of last year, and it wasn't released by his wife or girlfriend until December that he had died. And because he always wore this mask, which MF stands for Metal Face Doom, but he always wore this mask, and I guess he kept his private life like very, very private from his musical persona. And dude, I didn't find out that he died and I kind of kicked myself. I'm like, man, how did you not hear about that until a couple months after?
What the fuck is that shit?
But really awesome, awesome MC that left us too soon. And dude, Ike Turner apparently has vocals on this song too.
I heard.
I'm not a fan of Ike. No, I'm not either. I mean, the guy is certainly talented in his own right, but I mean, I don't know, man. It's, dude, that's not the kind of person I guess I personally would choose to work with.
Nope, me too.
So.
Agree. All right, MF Doom. All Alone featuring Roots Manuva.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think he's got an interesting flow in terms of like the cadence of it.
Yeah, I noticed that and took note of that as well. Now, you said, I'm pretty sure this happened for Plastic Beach, and maybe this was in the Bananas documentary as well, where some of the instrumentation for this was recorded in Africa. Now, wasn't some of the, I don't know if it was the orchestration parts or something in Plastic Beach also done in Africa, or there was behind that?
They went to Beirut. I think it was the Beirut Orchestra. So it had a very distinctly kind of Eastern and
it's an Eastern thing. Yeah.
Far from it, dude.
Well, so with this song, and let me make sure I'm looking at the right section here. You know, I just don't remember a whole lot of other songs sounding like this. And I've made note of a few of them. And, you know, I feel like this song has a real, I say Brian Burton, but Danger Mouse. Like, there's a couple songs on this where I'm like, man, I feel like that's, he had, like, I hear Danger Mouse that I hear...
He's credited as a writer for a lot of these, and this is one of them.
Yeah, yeah, and this is definitely one of them. That's why I checked. I was like, oh, man, I hear just, you know, by now he has worked with so many artists, but there's something about it. Yeah. I was like, oh, that there's a sound there. I recognize it.
Yeah.
But, dude, in the middle, man, I really love sort of, there's like that acoustic part sung. With the female vocals. Yeah. Oh man, it's so
that
good,
is,
dude.
That is really nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a nice little transition in touch for sure. Then we go to White Light, which is there's a couple of songs on here that are pretty short.
That's got a real, that synth just sounds like something buzzing.
Dude, yeah. Dude, the fuzz, man.
Fridge buzz.
It's a good fridge buzz. Definitely a good fridge buzz. But the song itself is, you know, it's very straightforward. The lyrics are pretty straightforward.
And not too varied.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Yeah. It's not like, you wouldn't be like, oh, well, we got a writer here. But it definitely, you know, it is definitely a straightforward song. And yeah, dude, it's that buzz is pretty cool. But dude, there is that little section in the middle that we got that kind of church choir sound, right? Like,
and it's really kind of ethereal.
Yeah, and that it pops up a little bit a couple times in this album, which I kind of dig. So
yeah, it does. I love Dare. I think Dare is a good song. There's a sweet remix of Dare 2 on D-Sides.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I read about that where it was. I don't know. Did they remove some parts or I don't know I forget exactly. I thought it was on the D-Sides. It was almost like a stripped down version is kind of how I read it. Maybe that's not true though, or how you would describe it. I don't know. It's interesting with Sean Ryder, who's, you know, he collaborated with on this song. he said one of the reasons was it was kind of like a, I don't know if I say like payback or something like that, but you know, I guess when Blur and Oasis were kind of like, you know, blowing up or whatever, he said, you know, he said Sean really kind of
was like
supportive and helped him out. And I'm kind of curious what if there's more behind that. I have some
background on this.
Okay, what do you got?
So, well, because as I've said many times, one of my favorite podcasts other than Scratch Your Track presented by the Dude and Grimm Show is Disgraceland.
Yes.
And Disgraceland did a good episode about kind of the rise and I guess what ended up being fall of Oasis. So it's obviously from Oasis's kind of standpoint.
Perspective, yeah.
But yeah, there was sort of a rivalry, and I don't know how much of it was actually a rivalry between the groups or if it was something that was built up in the
fueled
media.
By the media.
Because dude, that was one thing that I've kind of in listening to some interviews like with Method Man, apparently there's a lot of people who think that a lot of that East West Coast thing was a lot of it was from the media, even more so than the artists, like Vibe and The Source and stuff. Anyways, so there was just this sort of rivalry where in Oasis being who they were, I mean, I don't think it's any secret that Liam Gallagher is generally thought of as an asshole.
Yeah.
But you know, he would talk a lot of shit, I guess, about Blur because they were, instead of seen as like contemporaries, kind of how the Beatles and Stones were.
Stones.
Yeah. You know, it was just like, I'm better than you. And I'll show you why. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is,
you know, I guess if you're Damon Albarn and you're kind of like, well, that really wasn't my point. I was just trying to make music. I could see where that would be pretty frustrating because it's all over the press. It's like a big deal back then. And I don't think we heard as much about it here. I didn't know about it until listening to that episode about Oasis.
Yeah. I didn't really either. Yeah. We didn't,
but it makes sense.
On this side of the pond for sure.
But you know, it's interesting now because when you think about it, I guess I would say that Damon Albarn really kind of, if there was a battle, he won it because look at what he's done since even as a continuation of Blur and
Blur.
Liam Gallagher may well be smoking crack in an alley right now. I don't know.
Yeah. Like what are they doing
and no offense, I mean Noel is the one with the talent that I think everybody knows that.
Liam just drank too much. So anyways, now dude, next song, Fire Coming Out of the Monkey. Dude, this is one of the most trippy, unique songs.
Awesome.
Dude, Dennis Hopper's on it.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Like the first time I was, you know, listening, I remember listening to it the first time and you knew it was Dennis Hopper.
Stop him with the sirens, man. Stop him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all been approved.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the story. It very much reminds me of like, I've talked a couple times about The Flaming Lips, The King's Mouth, which is narrated by Mick Jones from The Clash. And he has just a very distinct voice and kind of like a trippy story. There's a lot of similarities there. They did a whole album on it. This is a song. Maybe you could argue that stands up a little more because you don't get bored of it.
It's possible.
But
yeah,
I don't know. I like it. They talk about they had this mountain and they started to mine the mountain. And, you know, I think it's kind of like a retrospective on society and treating resources as if they're infinite, but they're finite. Right.
They certainly are. So just keep driving your BMW SUV.
You got to put premium in those. I'll tell you what, there's never a slap in the mouth like when you're used to filling up your tank for like $30 and you're like, wow, $75. Like,
thanks.
Could almost went out to dinner for that.
Yeah. Make yourself a stew.
Yeah.
All right. So track number 14, Don't. Get Lost in Heaven. Another very short song. And I found it interesting that kind of Damon said, you know, this was very like sort of Beach Boys inspired.
Like, I can see that. I mean, in his way, you know?
Yeah, yeah, with the harmonies. I was also going to say, too, though, and this I find this interesting. A lot of times when we listen to, like, the Beatles and the Stones, and I'm talking about British artists, their accent kind of goes away. But I hear Damon's, dude.
Oh, yeah. Like, Damon's there are some sick, people man. you can hear it with them. But yeah, I know but what you mean. And almost in some songs you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, kind of like this one, I feel like I kind of heard a little more.
I really enjoy when Mick Jagger tries to do like his American country hillbilly accent.
American accent. But yeah, anyways, with this song, dude, again, we got the church choir kind of coming back in the background. I feel like this album actually, and maybe this kind of goes back to the story you're kind of telling where, you know, it's dark through the night and all this stuff. But then at the end, you know, you wake up and it's like, because I feel like this album kind of, even though the last song is Demon Days, I feel like it kind of ends on sort of an up. More hopeful and cheery and stuff. But dude, this one kind of has like a, I'm going on to Demon Days now, this like soul or reggae kind of beat to it.
I
found that was so interesting. Like, you hadn't heard anything like that really on the album, or at least that I can remember yet to this
point. I think that's what's kind of, that's what's really cool about it. And that's, you know, what it ends with.
Yeah.
Which in another life, or if you didn't know this album, you could almost think by the way the song is, and it's kind of so subtle and subdued, that like Don't Get Lost in Heaven's going to be the end. But I like that they kind of throw one more in.
Yeah, no, I was, yeah, it's funny you say that.
And
it's
cool that the title track is the last song also.
Yeah, that is cool, man. Yeah, I dig that. So, all right, Rin Tin Tim, what do you say here? I don't know who's scratching first. Am I scratching?
You
scratching?
I think you are scratching first.
I think I'm scratching. All right. So, if y'all don't know, this is the point where we pick the one track that we would scratch from the album. Doesn't mean we don't like it, but we could possibly skip it over. So, mine is going to be O Green World, my friend.
Oh! Didn't see that one coming. Well, and we are not going into overtime.
No Island Cap was here.
No.
Well, so let me say, actually, so part of the reason I chose that one is because I certainly don't mind going from Kids with Guns right into Dirty Harry. But with, I think there was something with O Green World that nothing overly, I don't know, stood out to me. Like, I mean, I did like the kind
even
of
the
eerie
fact that Danger Mouse is given co-writing credits.
Yeah, he's given co-writing credits, I think, on a few other tracks too. So. You know, there is that kind of eerie high-pitched synth sound, I guess, or maybe it's a guitar sound. I'm not sure which one it is, but you know, there was just something about it that just didn't strike me. And I'm like, okay, all right, if I had to pick one, I'd do that one. So let's get on to Dirty Harry.
Had to pick one, you know, just
Booty Brown.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got for me, Trim?
White Light, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's if they didn't repeat. Now I can see why you could make a good argument for it because of that like real ethereal section. That's an interesting trip, but
I do like it. Yeah.
I do too. But I just, the rest of it, I'm like, that line is just said
too many times,
you know. And the buzzing sound is, you know.
Well, in that, again, that sort of, you get the, you know, the kind of the church choir and everything, which is great. I love it. But that appears multiple times on the album. So it's not like it's an outlier. It's the only time.
Yeah, sure.
You've kind of heard it. So, yeah, I'm totally with that. I'm totally
favorite.
Favorite. Dude, I'm going to be, it might be El Mañana.
Interesting.
It might be El Mañana. Dude, I don't know, man. I'm a Feel Good Inc. fan too, because I just love the video too. I think it's pretty cool. And I love the form of the song, and I love when the acoustic comes in, you know, windmill.
Yeah, yeah.
That part is always like just grabbing me by the lapels. So I'm with it. You.
All right. I mean, I guess musically, Dirty Harry is I think that's real hot. But, dude, I really, really like Fire Coming Out of the Monkey's Head.
Yeah.
That's an awesome one.
It's definitely the most unique.
It's just so unique. Yeah.
Yeah. Never heard anything like it. Yeah, I mean, dude, Dennis Hopper, man. Dennis Hopper. All right, for all you Scratch Track fans, let us know your favorite song. Let us know your scratch. And doesn't mean you don't like it. Doesn't mean you hate it. It just means you could maybe do without it.
If something happened and you could choose the one that got ruined because you brought your CD case to the beach.
Yep.
You know? Or you let your friend borrow the record, you know, and they have like the Fisher Price turntable.
I do have one of those. but yeah, definitely let us know below. And, you know, if you guys like this episode, we do have, we do got we got Plastic Beach, and we have first impressions of their most recent album, which came out last
year. I guess it was. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that was 2020. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, Machine.
All right. So let us know below what you guys think. And if you have any recommendations for other albums we should scratch, talk about, please let us know. Yeah. All right. Time to go. The dude. Grim Show. Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tims. Copyright 2021. The Dude and Grim Show. Occupying the foreground is nostalgia.